Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. Jake Knapp went from a broke nightclub bouncer to PGA Tour winner and Masters participant in just four short years. Anthony Kim, meanwhile, set to make his competitive return after 12 mysterious years away. And Charlie Woods, just 15 years old, causes quite a scene at a PGA Tour pre-qualifier. Rex, what stood out to you the most this week?
Well, when you have a PGA Tour winner who only hits two fairways in the final round, that's always going to sort of bring up my radar a little bit, just because I'm curious about that. But once I got onto the shot link side, sort of broke down the stats, he led the field in strokes gained tee to green. I think this is just an example, a prime example of how you still have that power play in the game. That hitting fairways on certain golf courses like this one, which is a resort course, really isn't that big of a deal as long as you're giving yourself wedges in, you're giving yourself plenty of opportunities. He led the field in birdies. So that one was a little compelling to me when I woke up, but it's got to be Anthony Kim. We've talked about this. I mean, and I've racked my brain since I wrote that story a few days ago, just trying to come up with any kind of comp in any other sport. Like, give me an example of someone who walked away for 12 years from whatever their particular sport was and came back. Like, forget about had success, had some sort of, you know, resurgence. Forget about all that. Tell me someone that just did this.
I mean, you can't. I don't think there's any sort of comp. It's not, you know, you think of Patrick Cantlay who kind of missed 3 years because of a back injury. This was, I guess, partially injury motivated, but his game was kind of going into a little bit of a tailspin, and it's the mysteriousness of his disappearance, the insurance policy, what all goes into that. I mean, we're talking about a dozen years. Jordan Spieth had not yet played on the PGA Tour when Anthony Kim last played a PGA Tour event at Quail Hollow in 2012. That's how long it's been. And Jordan Spieth's now almost like an elder statesman, a 30-year-old on the PGA Tour. It's remarkable. I guess the question when it comes to Anthony Kim, Rex, not what do you expect, because I don't think anyone is expecting too much, but why Saudi Arabia? Why not come back at Vegas if he's going to play on LIV? Why not play in Vegas? Why not play in Miami? Why is he making his stop this week?
That was the question I asked. Well, I mean, there's kind of a two-part question. One, why LIV? Well, because he's going to get paid. I mean, we all know whatever the urban legend is about this insurance policy. It's somewhere between $10 million and $20 million, which probably 12 years ago sounded like a lot of money to you and I. But now, given where we are in the state of the game over the last 3 years, that kind of sounds like, well, $10 million, kind of take it or leave it. That's a good year on the PGA Tour, or half a good year on LIV Golf, whatever the case may be. So it has to be money is the reason why he's coming back and he's chosen LIV Golf. I've been told by sources that he was actually in conversations with both PGA Tour officials and LIV Golf officials because he wanted to figure out whatever his best avenue was going to be. But to your question, that's what I asked one of my sources at LIV Golf, is why this week? Why Saudi Arabia when you're essentially going to be playing in the middle of the night? You're not making the most of whatever this investment is. You're right. It would have been so much better in Las Vegas. And lacking that, you know, maybe if that wasn't going to work out, then wait a few weeks when they play in Florida, right, for the Masters. Like, don't you want the best impact from this?
Well, to me, the answer is probably no. And I can see why Saudi Arabia makes sense for a couple of different reasons. One, it provides sort of a protective cocoon. It's in the middle of the night. You're going to have very few fans on site. You know, just the sickos are going to be watching on the CW app to see how he performs. I'm certainly going to be one out of them. But I also think, Rex, if you're LIV Golf, you can trot Anthony Kim out as sort of they captured Bigfoot here. You know, that they can trot him out in front of all the people that they need to with the PIF and Saudi Arabia and say, look, we brought Anthony Kim back basically from the abyss. This is, I think, a show of strength. And I've seen the argument, well, this just kind of diminishes LIV. It hits at its credibility. You're trying to, you know, trumpet how strong this tour is. However, it's the exact same thing as if Anthony Kim is receiving a sponsor exemption to the PGA Tour. It is a little bit of a sideshow. It is kind of just a fan draw. And so I don't get that argument at all as a knock on LIV Golf, because the PGA Tour, had Anthony Kim chosen PGA Tour, would have opened their arms in any single tournament to try and bring him back into the fold.
Oh, no doubt. And this goes back to what I just said. I mean, he was in conversations with both sides. He was trying to figure out whatever the best deal was going to be for him going forward. And I guess I get your point. That's a fair point. And it's going to be in the middle of the night. He is in this cocoon. And I love the idea of catching Bigfoot. We just caught Nessie. This is what he's going to be, for lack of a better term. And this is no disrespect towards Anthony at all. He's the bearded lady at this point, because we don't know if he can still play at all. By some accounts, you hear about him hitting balls on a range somewhere and that he looks good and that he's been ramping up to this. But after 12 years, you would have no idea. Now, maybe that changes over the next few months when he actually gets back into some sort of competitive form and we start to see some version of the old Anthony Kim. I was talking with my son about this yesterday, about the idea. Does the name Anthony Kim stand out to you at all? And he's a golf fan now. He's sort of that generation of young golf fans. Nope, just blank, just crickets. So I guess on one part, I'm kind of questioning, you're right, he's the bearded lady. Like we trot him out, prove that we can bring this guy back from the abyss. But to a certain element of the audience, they have no idea who he is. You might as well just roll Ben Hogan out there for all they know. I mean, this is just someone that is a name from the past that you may or may not heard of. I mean, in his prime, he only won 3 times, but man, he was entertaining. He's exactly that guy that Liv Goff would want. He's the Bryson DeChambeau, for lack of a better term, of that era, because he made a lot of headlines. He was brash. He was flashy. He was fun. If he brings back a modicum of that, then it will be a victory for Liv Goff.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's a character, and this is a time when golf desperately needs more characters. I'm of the belief that I have just a hard time believing that he could be competitive. And I'm sure we'll get into this more on the Wednesday podcast where we're kind of previewing this week's tournaments. But I just can't help but think that if this does not go well, this could be a disastrous sideshow of him shooting 75, 76, and could really alienate fans who have been so invested in where he is, what he's doing, what potential kind of was left out on the table if this doesn't go well. And so that's kind of where I sit at this point. But I mean, I'm gonna tune in just like probably hundreds of other thousands of fans are going to be tuning in just to see what he brings.
Yeah, because you're right on this front. He's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. He's not going to get a runway. Everyone wants to see Anthony Kim from 2012, like before he got hurt.
I mean, he's got two or three events to make this happen. And if it doesn't, we're gonna move on to the next shiny object. That's just how it works in the sports world now.
As a board member on the GWA, I think I'm going to send a message out to the entire board that if he does pull this off, like whatever version of success we want to call, you know, Anthony Kim's comeback after 12 years, we need to rename the Hogan Award, which goes to someone who has suffered through some sort of injury and come back. Because I don't know that there would ever be in the future a comeback comparable to this.
I mean, it would be a phenomenal story if he can play well. It's just hard to imagine that he actually could. Rex, let's focus a little bit on Charlie Woods. Shot an 86 at a pre-qualifier to the Monday qualifier for the Cognizant Classic, this week's event, formerly known the Honda Classic at PGA National. Obviously did not make it through that, but I think even more attention grabbing than the score was the attention that it received, both from fans on site, and I'm sure people have seen the Palm Beach Post article kind of highlighting some of the poor behavior, but also the PGA Tour sending an entire video team to document his round for this pre-qualifier. What was your takeaway from his score, his round, his attempt, and also the coverage of the event?
Yuck.
Ew.
It was just all... Yeah, it was all kind of gross. Like, look, and I'm not talking about his score. He went out and tried to play. I'm sure he tried to compete as hard as he could, and he kind of gives him an idea where his game is and the things he needs to work on. All that's one side of this conversation, and good for him. Like, he's a teenager. Let's give him an opportunity to do this. The other part of it was just gross. Like, I read a couple of the stories about people demanding autographs and wanting pictures and them needing to have police officers on site. I mean, and look, maybe I remember the first year that Tiger played with Charlie in the PNC. And I remember feeling kind of the same way about myself and what we do, you know, not just at Golf Channel or NBC Sports, but all of the journalists who were in that tent that year. Like, oh, like, I don't feel good about this. Like, it was Tiger's decision to bring him in to the spotlight, but I still feel kind of gross after this. It's been different the last December when he was there. He looks more like a young man, and he carries himself more like a young man. He's not a child anymore, which is what he was the first time he played the PNC. This, though, I mean, just the coverage and everything you hear about the parents and the fans. I mean, just yuck.
I mean, so most people's reaction on social media was, you know, stop it. Let's just let the kid grow up in anonymity and play and see how he fares. And I don't necessarily agree with that. I certainly understand the attention. By playing the PNC the last couple of years with Tiger, he's essentially opened himself up as a public figure. I mean, that was a conscious decision by Tiger to put him in the spotlight. He clearly thought he was ready. He clearly thought he could handle it. He clearly knew the scrutiny and the attention it was going to receive, and he still signed off on it. And so I think the best comp, and you're a basketball fan, Rex, is Bronny James, who's now a freshman on the USC basketball team. He's averaging like 5 points a game. He's basically a non-factor for the Trojans, but his dad, LeBron, played in kind of the dawning of the social media era, just like Tiger Woods did. He's now one of the all-time greats in basketball, and Bronny James is trying to follow the same path and make it to the NBA to follow his dad. But Bronny James, has had cameras on him all the way since AAU ball. You know, there's just going to be a built-in fascination to how he plays. And so I understand. I understand the scorecard grabs, and I understand kind of keeping track of him on Junior Golf Scoreboard and seeing where his rankings are and seeing what sort of interest he might garner among college coaches. What I didn't like this particular week was the, I would just call it cringy attention that it received. Rather than just focusing on the scores and whether it was good enough, it was the autograph seekers. It was the PGA Tour's own department making the conscious decision to send a team there to document it. It's just so cringy. It's so disrespectful for how I think you should be treating a 15-year-old in this environment. And I also question kind of the strategy that's involved here. You know, maybe it was to try and get Charlie, you know, accustomed to going low in a single day event, which is what that's going to be the case in anything, whether it's college golf, pro golf. Like, you're going to have to put the peg in the ground and see if you could shoot 67, which was the score that he needed to get in here. But he's also never played an AJGA event. He has a sponsor exemption coming up. He's never played in qualifiers for the U.S. Amateur or the U.S. Junior. You know, I highly doubt that Team Woods could think that Charlie could slip in under the radar and just play this pre-qualifier without him knowing. But the fact that they keep signing off on this is a little bit of a head scratcher as well. That's definitely something that Tiger needs to be asked in a couple weeks' time, assuming he plays at the Players' Championship. What did you think of the attention, and what's kind of the strategy in the social media world to handle it?
I don't mind, you know, Tiger deciding, you know, Charlie needs to go out and do this more. To your point, and we had a colleague at Golf Digest, I think, did this during the PNC Championship, where he kind of broke down, because you and I probably get the same questions all the time. It's right around PNC, like, how good is Charlie Woods? Like, his swing looks just like his dad. Is he going to be great? And like our colleague Jay Coffin kind of broke it down in a very interesting way, kind of pointed out, like, this is what his amateur record is. And for the state of Florida, for his age group, he's probably in the top one third. He's not number one. He's not number one in all juniors. Like, it needs to be pointed out, because he hasn't done those things that you just pointed out. Like, he's a good player. I think he was the fourth player out of five on his high school team that won the state championship last year.
He was kind of the 5-6 man that ended up winning the state championship. I mean, he clearly has a lot of talent. Anyone who watches the PNC, like, ooh, that dude's got a great swing, got tons of speed, like, a lot of potential there, but he's not there yet.
No, he's not. So you one half of this is looking at it from the dad's perspective. You know, just because your dad's Tiger Woods, he still has to make the same decisions we have. And you'll have to make the same decisions with your kids at some point when it comes to whatever sport they choose to play. Do you push them? Do you want them just to enjoy it? Do you want them to push themselves against better competition? That's what this feels like he wanted to do. He wanted to send sort of Charlie into the fire and see, like, okay, this is what you have to do when you have a pencil in your hand and a scorecard in your back pocket. You've got to post some sort of score. You've got to figure out a way to get it around for 18 holes. That I'm fine with. Going back to the part about the attention, when it ends up on SportsCenter, and I guess Bronny is a really good comp, because I have rolled my eyes when I'm watching SportsCenter and I hear them talk about Bronny getting 3 points in the second half against whoever, and you're like, I'm sure someone on that team got more than 3 points. Like he could have been the high scorer in the second half. Like, that's not fair to him. That's not fair to the rest of the team. It's kind of not fair to the sport. It's the nature of media. We're both in media. I understand that. But yeah, again, you just felt like it was just dirty. And I don't know that there's any way around it. It's not going to scale back from here. Every time now he shows up at that US Open qualifier, or maybe even another Monday pre-qualifier, it's going to be the same thing.
And like, obviously I was not around for Jack Nicklaus's children's pursuit of a professional golf career, but the game has just changed in myriad ways with social media. Everybody's a keyboard warrior. Everyone has a cell phone. Like, there's nowhere to hide, whether he's playing in high school golf, whether he's playing in these sorts of qualifiers, whether he's playing in the PNC. Like, there's just such a microscope now that children of famous athletes endure. It's just a very unpleasant place, I can imagine, that you would want to reside. You know, I would not want to be in that position. You want to have every right. You want to have every opportunity to kind of chase your dreams. And there's so many more obstacles that are put in front of these kids of famous athletes now than that just didn't exist 20 or 30 years ago. And so I certainly empathize with that. I understand the attention, certainly, but I empathize with Charlie. I empathize with Tiger trying to kind of protect him as long as you can. But it's a cruel, vicious world, and it's going to be really, really difficult to make it.
Well, and I can kind of see the thought process here, because I've watched Tiger's attitude on this change since Charlie first played in the PNC. That first year, Tiger was very, very protective, as he should, with, I think Charlie was 12 at the time when he played in the first one. Like, I would be just as protective. I would hope I'd be just as protective with my kids, where he didn't, like, he wasn't involved in the interviews. He didn't want to do any post-game stuff with him. He just wanted Charlie to be there for the golf, be on the range, be there for the golf. It changed. At last year, it has evolved to the point that Charlie is right there next to him in the post round. You can tell the way he carries himself. And again, I think this is Tiger Woods, the dad, pushing his son to take on new things, to experience new things. Because it sounds to me like he remembers what his dad, Earl, did with him. And okay, I need to push Charlie in this particular case. And it luckily, he has this quote unquote luxury of being able to put him in the spotlight and decide how it's going to sort of unravel. I don't know, because I wouldn't have seen this coming. I wouldn't have expected it would have gotten as ugly and dirty and people demanding autographs and selfies and needing so much security at a pre-qualifier. Like, I'm kind of with Tiger on this one. Like, I would have had no idea that it was going to blow up to be that disgusting.
It's gross. I think the PGA Tour sending a video team is a decision I'm sure was highly scrutinized inside HQ as well, but I wonder if there's any regrets on making it a bigger deal than perhaps it was. Speaking of the PGA Tour, Rex, the Mexico Open, I guess, was kind of the tail end of the official West Coast swing. The PGA Tour now moves to Florida. What did you think of the Mexico Open? Tony Finau was the headliner. There are not many fans on the golf course. Have not seen the ratings information, but I can't imagine that set any records. And yet I was still, I wouldn't say captivated by the action, but I watched it, not just because I had to, but I watched the 3 hours of coverage, and I still think there's room on the PGA Tour calendar for these types of events. Maybe it's not, you know, the elite level world tour concept that Rory McIlroy and others have been pushing. Maybe it's, you know, it's more part of this hybrid PGA Tour B circuit and Korn Ferry Tour mix. But as long as you're allowing for and promoting upward mobility, which is what Jake Knapp now experiences by winning the Mexico Open, getting into the signature events for the rest of the season, getting into the Masters, being now on the verge of cracking the top 50 in the world, a new plethora of opportunities are available to him by winning the Mexico Open. To me, I think that's still an interesting storyline to watch, and a reason why, you know, true hardcore golf fans can still appreciate the Mexico Opens of the world.
Yeah, it's aspirational. Absolutely. And I think that's the selling point for the PGA Tour. And look, this is still very new, and I think the tour is going to sort of wrestle with what it is they're trying to create. I said this the other day, or last week, I think, during one of our roundtables, that this is the tiered system that they've created. And so they've got to figure out a way to make both sides of this work. For the players, it works. As you pointed out, that was pretty much the Mexico Open was the full field season is now getting started. You have Mexico, you have the Cognizant Classic coming up this week. And this is an opportunity for those players to play their way in. And you're right. Like, I mean, suddenly the world opens up for Knapp. He has an opportunity now to do something that he probably didn't plan on when he started his rookie season on the PGA Tour. And that'll happen to someone else in a few weeks when they go back into the sort of that full field swing of theirs. So I do love the concept of it. I was playing golf in South Carolina yesterday, right about the time they were finishing, and kind of went into the clubhouse. And I was amazed how many people were in there watching the coverage and sort of talking about it and asking about it. Probably not players that they recognize right off the top of their head. Probably not a golf course that they recognize right off the top of their head. But if you were a passionate golf fan, you were probably watching yesterday. And I think that's what you're going to see with these full field events.
And there was zero focus on money. I couldn't tell you how much Jake Knapp won. I'm assuming since it was a full field event in the PGA Tour, it's somewhere between $1.5 and $1.6 million. That was of little importance. That was of little consequence. What was most important to Jake Knapp is now the avenues for upward mobility that he has. To me, that was the perfect example of what these events could be. You had Jake Knapp, who graduated off the Korn Ferry Tour, by all accounts, is a player with a ton of potential. You see the easy ball speed cruising over 190, hits the absolute hell out of it, even though he was a little bit erratic on Sunday in Mexico. And he was going up head-to-head against Sammy Vallimaki, who graduated from a DP World Tour. Now you have the 10 cards in the European Tour getting onto the PGA Tour and that promotion. Like, that is exactly what this BC level tour should be. And so I thought the actual runway of that, I'm not sure that it resonated with fans outside hardcore PGA Tour fans, but I think that's perfectly okay. You clearly had a venue in Vedanta that wanted them to be there. You have Benjamin Salinas and the Salinas Group that clearly wanted the PGA Tour in town as well. I'm all for it. Not every event needs to be $20 million and everyone's just focused about the $3.6 million that the winner's going to get. These types of events can resonate as well.
$1.45 million is how much he earned, which is still a good payday. But to your point, given where we are in the state of the game, I just scoffed at a $10 million insurance policy at Anthony Kim. So it's all become Monopoly money at some point, and we sort of gloss over it. I think that's a really good point, because what you're going to end up with is sort of these ebbs and flows, and there's not going to be many Tony Finaus, I really don't think, in between here. But you also have the idea, and you mentioned Sammy, he finished in second place. There was a moment, I read a story this morning about on the 18th hole, where he's sort of wedged his tee shot under a fence and he's trying to decide what to do. And he asked the tour official what the score is. And he wasn't asking how far off he was from Knapp. He was asking how far the folks in third were from him, because he was thinking ahead to the Aeon 5. I need to make sure I lock up my spot in Bay Hill, probably the Players' Championship, I would think. No, maybe not. I don't think the Aeon 5 do get, but at the very least, Bay Hill.
Next, so they 10, get that next 10 and the swing 5. So I think he would be in the swing 5, yeah, which would get him, assuming, you know,
into Bay Hill for sure.
The perfect run out. Yeah. And this week in Palm Beach Gardens, he should be able to get into Bay Hill and then perhaps parlay that in the Players' Championship as well.
So I think that's what you start looking at from what's going to motivate these players. And it clearly was motivating him in that moment. He wasn't worried about trying to pull off some sort of miracle shot and win the event. I think he had to hole out from the fairway, do something ridiculous. He was thinking in very, very, you know, clinical terms about what do I need to do to make sure I lock up this really important start at Bay Hill in a few weeks. And I think you're going to start seeing more and more players do that. My curiosity, and we probably won't be able to unpack this until we get to the end of the season, is what kind of impact is this going to have on players' schedules like Jake Knapp? Like, you know, he's a bad example because he's won now, but he's a rookie on the PGA Tour. And my guess is, like most rookies or players who aren't inside that magical number to get inside the signature events, he's trying to figure out some sort of ebb and flow that I can play my best in between these signature events with the hope of getting in. And then when I do get in, now all of a sudden you're probably playing 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 weeks in a row. So it's going to create an interesting opportunity from a schedule standpoint for players.
Yeah, it's certainly a small sample size at this point. We're sitting here at the end of February, but you just look at the field this week for the Cognizant Classic. You're having guys who graduated from the Korn Ferry Tour who aren't able to get in. You have guys who got through Q School who are not able to get into what is supposed to be their opportunities, these full field events where you can have the week of your life, parlay that into then a start in the signature event series, and then you're off and running. I think the early returns, Rex, have been that guys are playing a whole lot more than maybe people thought. Both the players who are even in signature events, who are playing in full field events, or even guys with higher priority, making sure that they get their starts. This is such a sprint now with the season through January, through August, for the different cutoffs now to just get into the playoffs or retain your card and to try and get some time off so you don't have to play all throughout the fall as well. Yeah, it's definitely become a little bit of a pinch. Again, small sample size, but this week's event at PGA National is a good indication that guys are playing a lot more golf than I think the PGA Tour potentially realized. Before we go, Rex, your video quality is a little bit spotty. Your audio has been a little spotty. What do you have going on this Monday?
The Courtyard Marriott in Hilton Head does not have good Wi-Fi, at least on the fourth floor. So I do apologize for that. I've kind of noticed. So please, please suffer through this. I'm in Hilton Head for Heritage Media Day. I came up with my son. We played golf yesterday with a friend of mine at Old Tabby Links. And now we're playing Harbortown today. And he keeps asking me, how many balls did he have? Dad, how many golf balls should I have? And the answer is the same. Always a lot. Just bring a lot. Because your game probably isn't going to translate real well onto this golf course. Just go out and enjoy it.
So much OB. So many trees, so many houses. Hazards. It's just, that is a extremely difficult claustrophobic layout. I know the world's best players make it look easy. You and I played there probably at this point 7 or 8 years ago, back when I was actually playing decent golf, and you could be in the fairway and totally blocked out. It was maddening. It was frustrating. It was infuriating. I'm glad you'll be joining us on golf today to spare you probably 3 or 4 holes in the middle of your round that you will not be able to play. But Godspeed to both you and your son, Cole. I hope you guys have a great day at one of, I would certainly call it one of the best venues on the PGA Tour schedule. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Channel Podcast with Rex and Lav. As always, we'll be back 2 days from now for a preview of this week's Cognizant Classic, as well as Anthony Kim's competitive return in Saudi Arabia. There'll be so much to unpack just 48 hours from now. In the meantime, you guys know the drill. Make sure you go to nbcsports.com/golf for the latest news, notes, commentary, features, and everything else in the world of golf. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great rest of your Monday and Tuesday.
Catch up, Ross.